Hello and welcome to this nice podcast on the Familial Breast Cancer Clinical Guideline. This podcast focuses on the evidence behind the recommendations and what this means for clinical practice for genetic services. I am Katie Paramount-Ford, the implementation advisor for this guidance, and with me is Andrew Cuthbert, a cancer genetics counsellor at Birmingham Women's NHS Foundation Trust. Andrew is also a member of the Guideline Development Group who developed this guideline. Andrew, please can you explain how the guideline indicates the strength of the different recommendations? In particular, I'm thinking about where you say consider or offer in the recommendations.
Thanks, Katie. Some recommendations can be made with more certainty than others. The Guideline Development Group makes a recommendation based on the trade-off between the benefits and harms of an intervention, taking into account the quality of the underpinning evidence. Offer is made when we are confident that, for the vast majority of patients, an intervention will do more good than harm and be cost-effective, or we use do not offer when we are confident that an intervention will not be of benefit for most patients. Consider is used when we are confident that an intervention will do more good than harm for most patients and be cost-effective, but other options may be similarly cost-effective. The choice of intervention and whether or not to have the intervention at all is more likely to depend on the patient's values and preferences than for a strong recommendation. And so the healthcare professional should spend more time considering and discussing the options with the patient. For example, in this guideline for chemopreventative measures for breast cancer, we include both offer and consider recommendations. Offer tamoxifen to women at high risk of breast cancer, but only consider this, including in conversation with the person, for women whose risk of breast cancer is only moderately increased. This is because the strength of evidence from a series of studies is lower in the moderate risk category.
Right. Okay, thank you. It's good to be clear about the difference in the different type of recommendations. In 2004, in order to reduce the variation in clinical practice, the carrier probability thresholds for genetic testing, particularly the BRCA1 and BRCA2, were set at 20%. I've noticed that in the 2013 guideline, this has been reduced to 10%. And I just wondered why this is and for which patient groups this applies.
That's right. In the new and updated guidelines, the mutation carrier probability threshold for offering genetic testing for BRCA genes is reduced from 20 to 10% for a person with a personal history of breast cancer. The 20% threshold was originally recommended for historic pragmatic reasons, but over time it has drifted downwards in many genetic centres as the cost and speed of testing has improved. For the 2013 updated guidelines, a rigorous health economics model was developed to determine the cost effectiveness of testing for BRCA mutations at differing mutation probability thresholds. There was good evidence to support a recommendation that testing should be offered to individuals, that includes men and women, with breast cancer who have a combined carrier probability of 10% or above, as measured by an adequately performing carrier probability estimation method, such as BODICEA or the Manchester scoring system, which are mentioned in the guideline. Evidence for cost effectiveness at the 5% threshold was found, but it was weaker, showing cost effectiveness in some age groups but not in others. In the previous guideline, people with a personal history of breast cancer were not covered by the recommendations directly. In effect, clinicians would offer testing to them via an unaffected family member who was often a person referred to the clinic for concerns about their family history. This update and these genetic testing recommendations effectively address this gap in the guidance.
So where should carrier probability testing be carried out and how?
Under most but not all circumstances, carrier probability estimation should be carried out in a specialist clinical genetics department. That is within the tertiary care setting, although the tiers and structures for healthcare seem to be changing a great deal at the moment. However, it's recognised that in some circumstances it may be possible for this to be performed in some secondary care settings, such as family history clinics, where breast cancer risk assessment and appropriate surveillance is widely provided in the NHS. By these means, it will be possible to determine who may be offered a referral to a specialist genetics clinic where counselling and genetic testing can be appropriately provided. Additionally, people may be referred directly to a specialist clinic by their doctor for carrier probability assessment. In terms of the methods that should be used to carry out these probability assessments for a BRCA gene mutation, tools with good performance, which means calibration and discrimination. This was reviewed and compared for most of the methods which are used currently in clinical practice. Most methods performed with acceptable discrimination, such that it was not possible to specifically recommend one over the other. But the web-based Boadicea model is calibrated against relevant populations for the UK and performs well, but it can be time-consuming, whereas the Manchester scoring method is more convenient and doesn't require a computer as such. Both these tools have been widely used in specialist genetics clinics for some years now, which is why they were highlighted in the recommendations. But other methods have also demonstrated acceptable performance.
Do people need specific skills in order to use these tools, or can they be used by anybody that's trying to test for carrier probability?
I think if they haven't used them before, they would certainly need some training, even for the relatively straightforward Manchester system, because it has additional features, which, you know, including tumour pathology, which can help to improve its discrimination and its assessment. Boadicea requires rather more training because it's quite time-consuming and computer and web-based. So there are training implications if you're going to use this outside a specialist clinical genetics centre.
So are there any instances when genetic testing should be done more quickly than what we've already outlined?
There's a lot of interest in this. And in the new guideline, it's recommended that fast-track genetic testing that is within 4 weeks of a diagnosis of a primary breast cancer is in fact only offered as part of a clinical trial. This was carefully considered because there is much interest in the issue. However, there's no clear evidence at the moment for a benefit from having rapid genetic testing at the time of diagnosis. But it's recognised that earlier knowledge of genetic status might increase the uptake of risk-reducing mastectomy, and perhaps in future it will guide choices for first-line chemotherapy in the patient. But to be useful for making these decisions, gene tests need to be performed and achieved within a very short period of time of the initial diagnosis, probably less than 4 weeks. Therefore, this creates potential logistical problems in providing enough information for considered decision-making and delivering results of genetic tests in a supportive environment. Genetic counselling to facilitate such decisions soon after diagnosis would require a reorganisation of current services.
Okay, so maybe this is something more based on the future within the services than currently at the moment.
That's right. I think that there'll probably have to be some reconfiguring of how genetic testing is provided if you're going to be able to deliver this in shorter periods of time. As I say, there is still debate as to whether there is any evidence that it is a benefit to patients, so I think research in this area would also be helpful.
Can you tell me what other areas of the guideline will mean a big change in practice for genetic services and counsellors?
I think one of the key ones which is new to this guideline is the issue of chemo prevention, taking drugs such as tamoxifen and raloxifene to reduce the risk of breast cancer for someone who has no personal history. This was not in the previous guideline, and there are recommendations now to offer this or consider this for women with a high risk or a moderately increased risk of breast cancer. So there's quite a lot of interest in this, but it's not clear how many women will actually choose this option, but it is certainly something that should be discussed with the individual concerned if it seems appropriate.
And finally, what research is still needed in this area of practice?
Well, there's a lot of research recommendations were made. Some of these were prioritised, one of them being to get more research on the models used to predict the likelihood of a BRCA gene mutation. It is recognised that they do give good estimates, but they have quite wide confidence margins, so we want to more information, more data to improve the discrimination of these models. And the second thing it relates really to this issue of rapid access to genetic testing close to the point of diagnosis. So developing trials or research in this area to see whether there is any real benefit to this. So really to sort of address the optimum model for service delivery and organisation, looking at the clinical and cost effectiveness of such changes, its uptake and measurable outcomes, and also to explore the patient's perceptions and experience of having taken up this option.
Thank you, that's really helpful, Andrew, and I think it will be a big help to those from genetic services when they come to implement the guideline in practice. So for more information on the Familial Breast Cancer Guideline and for access to the implementation tools, please visit the NICE website.